The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Live from Northern California, it's Lifeline with Craig Roberts. He's the host of Northern California's longest-running conservative talk show. He's a man with a message, a conservative with compassion. He's Lifeline's own Craig Roberts.
Well, it's Wednesday, the 13th of March, and a pleasant good afternoon to you. Welcome to the midpoint in the week. And a little bit of wind, but it looks at least like we're getting a little bit of a break here weather-wise, and hopefully that lasts for a while here, huh? What do they say about March comes in like a lamb and goes out like a lion? In this case, it came in like a lion, and hopefully that means a couple of weeks hence it will go out like a lamb. Although, for those of you that are perhaps new to the Bay Area, the chilly weather, unseasonably cool for this time of year, I would say, at least in the last many years, that seems to be the case. In any event, enough for my commentary on the weather. Let's talk about more important things, shall we? And as we dive right in, one of the issues that you will hear is a bit of a reoccurring theme, particularly as we head into the November political cycle, is helping believers to understand not only our role in the body politic, that sense of self-governance, the phrase that I often quote from the Gettysburg Address. You're familiar with it undoubtedly as well. Government of, by, and for the people. But what does the government of and by really look like? And some would argue that we have been entirely too deeply involved in politics to be any spiritually good. Others would argue we've been so spiritually focused we're no political good. But maybe there is some balance in between. Although at the end of the day, I want to be careful, I think, in terms of perspective, at least within the confines of this program, that we like to stay with a firm biblical foundation, that foundation that suggests that to affect change, real change, permanent change, it has to come from the heart. And of course, that is where the spiritual realm has the greatest impact and influence. Now, am I suggesting that we cannot, to some degree, affect morality and attitudes through laws, legislation, public policy, things of that? Well, of course we can. But the greater impact, the lasting impact on changing the direction of a nation is to change the nation's heart. And we change the nation's heart by, of course, introducing the nation to Jesus Christ. All right, with that as a foundation, we're going to dive in a very important topic here today, and that is, to some great degree, what got us in this mess in the first place. And you have to roll the clock all the way back 60-something years, 1962, 1963, the United States Supreme Court enacting a pair of very dangerous decisions that I think in some form and fashion, while not responsible for, at least has been contributory toward the direction that our nation has been heading in. Some might say a bit of a crash course with destiny. That would be removing of prayer from the public classroom, Bible reading from the public classroom, effectively an attempt by the likes of Madeleine Murray O'Hare and others to try and sanitize the public square from anything that resembles faith or people of faith exercising their political rights and responsibilities. At the end of the day, were we absent? Were we MIA in 62 and 63 that helped set the stage? What is ultimately the spiritual price of political silence? some might argue we're watching some of the effects of that all around us today. Christy Shavers Stutzman joins us now. She is a former state representative from Indiana. Her husband was a member of Congress for quite a while, and she's traveled literally all over the globe and joins us now to talk about this book and this very important topic, The Spiritual Price of Political Silence. Christy, welcome. Great to have you with us.
Thanks so much for having me. It's great to be with you.
Boy, you know, there is a bit of a quandary here, to be sure. We see some respects in which people of faith have worked hard, in a sense, to be hostile toward secular culture, and perhaps in the process have failed to engage it. Sometimes we've chosen to ignore it, or in other even worse scenarios, surrendered to it. And of course, as I suggested in my opening remarks in relationship to the Supreme Court decisions back in 62, 63, while not, I think, necessarily directly responsible for, but at least contributory towards some of the challenges we are seeing faced in the public arena today, that our voice has largely been silent, and certainly at times as a result, I think that we've come to pay a price for that.
Yes. You know, in my book, The Spiritual Price of Political Silence, I talk exactly about that subject matter and try to address it head on. I think we're generations into a mentality, a wrong mentality, towards what our responsibility is and continues to be as people of faith in this nation. It's our birthright, actually, to be involved and to speak out and to have a say in our governance, because as you said in the beginning, this is a government of and by and for the people. And, you know, as I did my research, it was encouraging, actually, to find out that the tools that the founders put in place that created this government of the people are still in place, and we still have access to them, and we still have the wherewithal to actually make a difference as of today. I mean, it's getting more and more out of reach as we talk today, but at the same time, I think it is encouraging to look at the tools that we have in our hands, and the fact that we can actually make a difference. We can run for office. We don't have to have the name of, you know, Duke so-and-so or Lord so-and-so to be part of a parliament. You know, I'm just a music teacher and a composer who got tired of watching things happen that were not according to what I believed America should be, and decided to get involved. Anybody can do that, and that's what I think is most encouraging.
Help us understand in terms of some of the historical roots here. I've alluded, of course, to the Supreme Court decisions, and I suppose there are degrees, right, Christy, in which this kind of feels like the debate over what begat what. Did the chicken begat the egg, or the egg begat the chicken?
Right.
Meaning, in this case, where there are certainly plenty of examples that we can point to where we have been politically absent, missing in action,
right,
from the arena of self-governance as Christians, and therefore we've almost sort of just, you know, turned the keys over, so to speak, and allowed a lot of this to happen. Then there's the flip side of that argument that says, well, there are aspects of which the church has gotten so involved in politics that we have failed to recognize that while the importance of being salt, that preservative, critically important, particularly to a nation like ours where we do govern ourselves, but that we cannot forego the first and foremost priority for believers, and that is to be light. So from your study, your research, your perspective, is it either or both and in terms of some of the failures that have gotten us to where we're at today?
Well, I would argue that it's both and. After doing research on, you know, that the roots of this cultural humanist Marxism that we see in our culture today, it definitely goes back almost 100 years, actually, in America. So that was kind of eye-opening for me as I did the research to realize that, first of all, you know, people like Wilhelm Reich and Antonio Gramsci and other socialist communists actually decided from their humanist point of view that they, you know, had never reached their own utopia, which they're always reaching for. It's always around the corner, right? It's always going to be in the next unsuspecting civilization. And so they targeted America. And when they targeted us, they targeted our institutions of education. They really targeted our children. And so that has been part of the problem in America. But the other part has been that we have not armed ourselves with the armor of God and knowing what we believe and why we believe it well enough to be able to argue it in the public arena. And so, therefore, there has been a little window of opportunity where, as I did my research on the church itself, it's saddening to see that there was a split in the church, in America specifically, on their view of government. So half the church decided that, well, you know, it's just corrupt, it's just ridiculous, it's ugly, we're not going to be involved, and they just kind of focused mainly on the church's call, and we're not going to be involved at all. There was also intimidation going on from, you know, institutes of higher learning saying that Christians weren't scientifically minded because they were creationists, or, you know, because they believed the Bible. So therefore, they were not really, you know, qualified to weigh in on certain things in the public arena. But then the other part of the church actually decided that the government was the answer to so many things that they actually relegated a lot of their responsibilities to the government, which was given to them, you know, by God to do as a church and as an entity. So I think the answer is right in the middle. And I really think that right now it's the time for people of faith to link arms, to understand what's at stake. And I think what's at stake, the spiritual price we're paying right now, is twofold. First of all, we see the spiritual decadence and we see the spiritual lack of understanding in our children, to the point where we are seeing a huge rise in suicide attempts. We're seeing a huge rise in drug addiction. We're seeing a huge rise in gender confusion. All of this goes back to a lack of truth, a lack of understanding of what God's word says. And then the other spiritual price we're paying, and I was faced, like, just completely full face with this when we traveled on diplomatic missions around the world. As, you know, someone who was married to a leader in our country, sometimes you were in on conversations that kind of shocked you simply because they wanted to take the opportunity to talk to a leader in America. And so there were several conversations where leaders from other countries would say things like, we want to do trade with you. You know, we really want to open up and share with you what we produce and have a good relationship there, but please stop exporting your morals. We heard another person say, you know, you have done the thing that Jesus said to do. You have been salt and light. You have done that. Thank you. And then the next sentence was, please don't stop. So there is a spiritual price we're paying, especially if we don't protect and defend and preserve our way of life that allows us the freedom to be salt and light in our community, but also to flourish and to go throughout the entire world and do all of the missions that we have done, educational, healthcare, disaster relief, you name it. That goes away too. So that's going to be a spiritual price we pay if we don't get our own house in order.
With us today, Christy Shaver-Stutzman. We are talking about her book, Spiritual Price of Political Silence, talking a bit about not only where we are in the body politic, but also the body of Christ, the intersection between the two, and just exactly perhaps as we return, where some of the critical failure points have been, the territory that we have, I guess, in a real sense have abandoned, and how we can reclaim it. We'll get to that part of the conversation as our discussion continues here on the Wednesday edition of Lifeline from KFAX.
And now back to Lifeline with Craig Roberts.
All right, back to our conversation. A look at the spiritual price of political silence. Christy Shaver-Stutzman with us today. Christy, I'm curious. One notable arena where this seems to be problematic, and you touched on it before the break, is the arena of education. Whether we talk about my example of the impact of the Supreme Court decisions in 62 or 63, or just what we've seen in the changes, not only at the local level, meaning everything from elementary all the way through high school, but even at the level of higher education. I would suspect it might surprise, if not outright shock, some people listening to our conversation today, that schools that are considered sort of harbingers for liberalism, like Harvard, Yale, Princeton, across the pond, Oxford, ironically, all began as Christian institutions, although you could barely find a scant reflection of Christianity as part of their governing morals today. And I wonder if these are examples of sort of the problem that we've seen, this drifting away, almost a sense that we have either surrendered our responsibility or, quite frankly, even abrogated our authority in this arena.
Yeah. I think when you point to all of those institutions, they were all targeted by this type of cultural humanists when they came to these shores. But at the same time, you have to ask yourself, well, were the people there prepared? You know, did they know their stuff? Were they armed and ready? And I think it's a combination of possibly lackadaisical approach or questioning themselves, or, you know, it's a combination of a lot of things. But at the same time, it's really hard to see the fact that not only have they taken over these places, but they have also taken it all the way down to the kindergarten level now. I mean, it is rife with this type of mentality, and you see it in teachers, you see it in administrators, you see it in professors, and the whole educational system from the bureaucracy on down. And what's scary is that it has been going on for so long, but what's encouraging is the fact that during COVID, I truly believe the fire was turned up real hot on some parents who all of a sudden woke up and said, now, wait a minute, what are they teaching you? What are they teaching my third grader? That's not okay. And started waking up and doing something about it. That's why you see all these parents going to school board meetings and things like that. So this is a wake-up call, I think, and it's a second chance for parents, for Americans, for Christians, for people of faith to stand up and say, whoa, okay, maybe we weren't paying attention before, but we are now, and we can actually pull this thing back before it's too late. So yeah, I mean, it's been a long time, and there's been multiple reasons why we have been inundated with this this godless mindset. It's definitely humanism at the crux and the root of all this.
Here, I guess, Christy, is the $64,000 question. How do we go about getting re-engaged or continuing to be engaged and not wind up getting pulled into sort of the dregs of politics? I hear all the time the notion that people say, well, I don't want to get involved because politics has become so dirty. Or others that have said to me, I had a caller recently said, Craig, I first got excited about this idea of salt and light together in the political arena when Jerry Falwell's Moral Majority was getting started, mm-hmm. my gosh, back in the late 1970s, early 1980s. And I went to rallies and I got involved and I supported and I talked to people at church about all of this. And ironically, for all the years that we've been involved in the political process over 40 years, I look back on it now and it seems as if instead of things getting better, it's gotten much worse. So how do we go about striking that balance where we don't become one of them, so to speak, in the sense of succumbing to the divisiveness and the nastiness, which more often than not tends to so quickly turn off the opposition, we never get a chance to even make our case before we've already offended them.
Right, exactly. No, I mean, it's ugly, and when you look at the history of American politics, it's never been pretty, actually. When you look back at Thomas Jefferson's arguments with John Adams in the public, it was pretty nasty, and Abraham Lincoln's campaigns were nothing better, and, you know, so it's always been a pretty rough and tumble type of political climate in America, and that's, you know, it's part of freedom, it's part of having that dialogue. But I think the difference that you're talking about here is the fact that, you know, when a person of faith wants to step into that arena, and he wants to be, you know, an example, an salt and light in that situation, it makes it difficult when it is so ugly. And what I encourage people to do is, first of all, look at the local level. The local level is the front lines of American politics right now. And, you know, when I did a study on the Pilgrim Fathers and the Quakers and the Puritans and all these people who came here to these shores seeking religious asylum way back in the 1600s. One of the things that I noticed about them was that they were willing to be stepping stones. And that's not fun to think about. I don't enjoy the thought of being a stepping stone and having someone walk on my back in order to get someplace where I really wanted to go. But at the same time, I think we're at that point in this country. So we have to just kind of have a come to Jesus moment and go, okay, I'm at a moment in history where I might be a stepping stone, which means that I'm probably going to have to make some sacrifices. A long time ago, someone gave my husband some great advice when he first stepped into the arena running for a state representative seat. And they said, you know what? It's not going to be easy. It's going to be difficult. You have a target on your back from the beginning, but just put your reputation in God's hands and leave it there. Christ made himself of no reputation, took upon the form of a servant, was made in the likeness of man, and he humbled himself to the death on the cross. So if he can do it, let's follow his example. And so when we're talking about politics, yes, it's ugly. Yes, it's kind of messy. And there is a lot of corruption. But if we're not there at the table, then we're not going to stop the corruption. And yes, it seems, you know, like not we're losing the battle here and there. But I can tell you so many stories of little battles that we have won and large battles that we have won over the years. You look at the pro-life, you know, movement in this country. We had a huge win with Roe v. Wade. But I think what people really need to realize is the fact that when Roe v. Wade was overturned recently, that doesn't mean the battle's over. Because as Christians, as Americans, as people of faith, and my book is non-denominational, it's to all people of faith, and it's non-partisan, so I'm not pushing one party over the other. But I do tell the truth, and I do share with you like what the parties stand for, and you can see for yourself, and it's very clear. But at the same time, so as Christians, when we step into that arena, we have to realize that this is the long game, just like in the pro-life movement. It's not over, and it's never over until we are, you know, constantly living in a state where we're looking in the mirror, we're analyzing the culture of our own hearts first. Then we create a culture in our home with our children. We create a culture in our community. So when you go on the local level and you vet candidates you're running for, a school board, or if you're a commissioner, you know, town council, these people are the front lines. They deal with a lot of budgetary decisions. They deal with a lot of, you know, important decisions. But those people will possibly eventually run for something higher. And when they do, they're going to be making moral decisions on a daily basis that have to do with things that you believe morally. So if you don't vet them early and often, like I like to say, then you lose the ability to actually have an influence with someone who could possibly move up to another, you know, the next level of service. So it's important for us to be involved in the beginning, even if it's just walking in a parade or making a phone call or hosting a reception or just going to a town hall. All of that is being active and being aware and educating ourselves about the people who are involved and possibly getting involved ourselves.
Yeah, we had a little bit of an object lesson we shared with listeners here recently, just sort of a microcosm example of a community in the East Bay called Union City. It's a bedroom community, and it down through the years wound up gathering a collection of members of the city council, three of whom are eager pro-marijuana. Let's put pot stores everywhere we can, as many as we can. We don't care if it's close to kids or schools or residential neighborhoods. So long as we're making tax revenue on it. And I think to myself, what a horrific idea should a member of that council, the mayor, for example, term out and then decide to run for a higher office and be able to move those ideas of extreme progressivism to the point of putting kids at risk. It's the same town that's dealing with a higher rate of drug abuse amongst middle school kids than even communities like Oakland. And think, wow, this is what happens when people don't get involved, and individuals that care more about politics than they do about people suddenly are calling the shots.
Yeah, exactly. So what I found is when you're dealing with people who are, you know, part of the common council or the school board or commissioner or mayor, vet them thoroughly for everything that you believe in and that you stand for, and imagine them running for a position where they are going to be making moral decisions, whether it's pro-life issues, whether it's free speech, whether it's, you know, just parental control or health freedom, whatever it is. There's an important, you know, things to you with your worldview. And if you tell yourself, well, you know, they're not going to be making a decision on First Amendment rights in this position, but they will be eventually. And the other thing, too, that is great about getting involved in the local level is the fact that if you help them in their first campaign for commissioner, they will have your name in their cell phone. They will know you personally. And when they are a state representative or a state senator or a congressman, they will still know you. And your job as a citizen is to hold them accountable, to keep that, hold their feet to the fire. So when they see your number and they say, well, hello, I mean, how are you doing? Well, buddy, I'm kind of watching your vote on this and it's not going well. What are you thinking? Just tell me what you're thinking on this. You have a conversation with your representative, and you can be an influence. You speak for probably thousands of people in that moment.
An insightful look at the issue of the spiritual price of political silence. Christy Shavers-Stussman. Christy, thanks so much for the time. We appreciate you spending some of your valuable time with us here today on Lifeline. 533 from KFAX.
And now back to Lifeline with Craig Roberts.
All right, well, today a theme, at least in the first hour, seeming to touch on the issue of getting involved, making a difference, not being silent, et cetera, et cetera. And our next conversation certainly pivots in that, continues to pivot in that direction. Becky Morales is the HOPE program manager on behalf of Real Options. And this is a arm of Real Options that, quite frankly, doesn't get as much attention as it ought to. So often there is a focus or an emphasis on meeting the needs of women who find themselves in unplanned pregnancies. And while certainly that's sort of job one, there's also a sense of aftercare, the lingering impact of abortion. And when I say lingering impact, I do mean an impact that can be there for a lifetime. Whether a mother has gone through an abortion because they were talked into it by a husband or a boyfriend or a parent, or perhaps have dealt with other aspects, maybe it's infertility, miscarriage, even stillbirth, that sense of pain and oftentimes guilt as it relates directly to abortion can even create post-traumatic stress disorder kinds of symptoms. So what does one do? Where do you go to find support? Well, that's what Becky is here for. Becky, welcome.
Thank you very, very much. I am so honored to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
When we talk about going through the aftercare of a post-abortive mm-hmm. woman or a woman who has gone through, as I mentioned before, something like a miscarriage or stillbirth, give us some insights in terms of the emotional and spiritual impact of that and what kind of support is provided through Real Options to help women and men, for that matter, that are dealing with those issues.
With miscarriage and stillbirth. Well, I think with miscarriage and stillbirth, I think many women feel like God is angry with me. And I think for a lot of people who've had miscarriage, a lot of times an abortion can be before that. So if someone had an abortion and then they have a miscarriage later, they think, oh, God is punishing me. So that is another reason why we do widen the net for people who have miscarriage. We have also seen an incredible increase in the past few years with the miscarriage. So many women are coming up to me all the time to talk about, I had a miscarriage and the doctors didn't do anything about it and I just had to stay home. And there is so much trauma that is surrounded by miscarriage. And a lot of people just don't know how to deal with it. And, you know, we as humans are supposed to grieve. And that is what God has given us this emotion to have. And what is called about healthy grief. And what is the difference between healthy grief and unhealthy grief? You can do one or two things, especially with miscarriage. You can have the miscarriage and then you think, well, I'm going to have another baby in just a few months. So I'm going to go back to work and everything's going to be fine. But especially with our retreats and our support groups, we talk about what is the difference between healthy grief and unhealthy grief, and what are those tools that we can give you to help you grieve in a healthy way and create a safe space for you. And that is why we do our weekly online support groups and we do our retreats.
And I would imagine there are some eavesdropping that say, well, you know, I've kind of suspected that I am struggling with post-abortive trauma, but boy, I'm so afraid to speak out. I have such a tremendous sense of guilt or shame. And then you talk Absolutely. About, well, maybe getting involved in a retreat, and that scares me even more. How can you help to allay the concerns of women that are dealing with that?
You know what? One step at a time. But I will say this. Coming to a support group is a great first step, you know, getting your feet wet. A lot of people don't want to go to retreat. And I could see that. That could be pretty intimidating. But I think a lot of people, they want to say, yes, I want to make, like how you're saying, I want to make an impact in the community. I want to do great things. I don't want to be silent. But yet when it comes to reproductive loss, it's very silent. And I myself am very bold about my two abortions that I had before my husband. And I have seen so much impact with so many women because I decided to not keep silent. And I've been doing this for 10 years. And I have never had one person say, I can't believe you had an abortion, or you're just shameful. It's been the opposite effect. Because of the fact that I have decided not to be silent, more women are not being silent with me, and they're talking more about their abortions. They're talking more about their reproductive loss. And that talking about it with a safe person is one of the greatest and like first steps that you can make in your healing journey. I mean, finding somebody that is a safe person, especially with our support groups and our retreats, who we have safe people that are surrounding them. But that is a great first step in it. Yeah.
And you mentioned about retreats. Tell us a bit about what happens at the retreats and when's the next upcoming event.
Our next retreat is April 19th to the 21st. I will say this. We have six a year. We're going to be having six a year. And they're getting so in demand. We went from four to six. Because they're full. They're getting completely full 6 to 7 weeks before the retreat starts. We're already on a waiting list for the April 19th to the 21st, and we're always accepting a waiting list. But I will say this, these retreats are incredibly transformational because you can come with your husband. And reproductive loss is for anyone who's had a miscarriage, abortion, adoption placement. That means if you've given your child up for adoption, or you've gone through some adoption and something happened that was wrong in that adoption, that's another time that you can come in infertility. That widens the net so much. You're going to get every walk of life that comes to the retreat, from women who are 18 years old to women who are 70, and couples and young and old. And they come and they're sad, and some are numb, and this is where they find healing. You go through the whole steps of anger. You're able to connect with your feelings. I think for a majority of people, when they think about their miscarriage or their abortion, they think of a bloody fetus. They think of being in the hospital. They think of all the things that happened that's surrounding that memory. And the retreats are actually retraining your memory and healing your memories. So when you look back on what has happened, it's not so bad, and it gives you closure. And I think for me, carrying the self-hatred that I had for my abortions for so many years, I didn't realize I was carrying it till I went to the retreat and I realized I have to forgive myself. Because like I said, it's easy to say, hey, Jesus, forgive me for what has happened. It's another thing, it's another step to say, I forgive myself. And that is a lifestyle. And so these retreats are helping you understand why you do the things that you do, and giving you tools to give you self-forgiveness, to forgive others, to forgive yourself, and move forward. We do a memorial service for our children, because, you know, people need normalcy, and that creates a normalcy and closure when we do the memorial services at the end of the retreat. So these are incredible things that we do. I'm incredibly passionate because I see the work. I see that it works. And so I encourage everyone out there, if they're listening, take a step out and talk about your pregnancy loss, your reproductive loss, with a safe person, and come to a support group, come to a retreat. It is life-changing. And if you'd like to know more about what we do, you can come and hear us at our friends at realoptions.net. And we do a Discover Real Options on April 27th, and you can come and learn more about what we do and even volunteer if you'd like as well.
And you mentioned about the retreat coming up in April, already having a waiting list. I'm curious, in terms of support groups, can folks sort of dive in or get involved in those throughout the year at any given time?
Yes, we have support groups weekly online, and you can just Becky at realoptions.net or Hope at realoptions.net, and you can I can send you the Zoom link. And we have another retreat June 27th to the 30th. We have another retreat August 15th to 18th, and another retreat September 27th to the 30th, and another retreat in November as well. And if anyone's interested about any of those dates, please email. I would love to talk to you more about everything and the life change and transformation about our HOPE program and all that we can offer to them.
And I think for listeners, it's encouraging to know that there are a variety of retreats that are being planned for throughout the year. So if the April event is one that's either too soon for you, or as Becky mentioned, there's already a waiting list looking at other options, the June retreat, August, September, even into November, you have other opportunities available to, in addition to, of course, the weekly support groups. Get more information online. Go to friendsofrealoptions.net. That's friendsofrealoptions.net. Our thanks to Becky Morales, HOPE Program Manager, on behalf of Real Options for that update. 5:45 from KFAX.
And now back to Lifeline with Craig Roberts.
All right. Well, exemplary of our conversation earlier this evening with former Congressperson Christy Saltzman about what happens when you don't get involved to stand up, particularly when it comes to preserving and protecting the best interest of your children in places like everywhere from City Hall, as we talked about earlier, to certainly on the school board. We have some examples for you of the dangers. Let's get some insights now. Joining us is the founder and president of the Pacific Justice Institute, constitutional lawyer Brad Dacus. And Counselor, always a privilege to have you join us. So let's start first with an issue that, you know, once again seems to sort of be an outgrowth of gender dysphoria. And I kind of predicted, if we roll back the clock, when we first started seeing this topic hit the news long about when the former Olympian Bruce Jenner went public with changes there, now Caitlyn Jenner. I talked about the fact that there would be issues that would create not only psychological problems for young people struggling with gender dysphoria, but that there would also be growing examples where there would be those that would take advantage of this environment in a form and fashion that seemed to almost spit in the eye of women who worked so hard to raise attention during the Me Too movement. Examples of abuse, sexual abuse against women, and what's happening in a case regarding a family that operates a spa in the state of Washington, I think is an exemplary of just how problematic this is. Give us a bit of background, please.
Yeah, it is, Craig. You're absolutely right. It's a Christian-owned Korean woman's spa, so only women. Because Korean spas, they don't wear any clothes. So mothers and their young teenage daughters will go to these spas. Well, a man comes in and he says, hey, I see myself as a woman. I want you to let me in there so I can take off my clothes and effectively be naked with the naked women and their teenage girls. Of course, this Christian-owned business, they said, absolutely not. Definitely not. He leaves, calls the Washington State Human Rights Commission. This is sort of George Orwell's 1984, where everything means the opposite of what it really is. And this Human Rights Commission sues this Korean spa to shut them down because they will not let a man go in and expose himself to naked women and their teenage daughters. We took this on, Craig. It's an important case. And we intend to take, we at Pacific Justice Institute intend to take this case all the way to the Supreme Court if necessary.
And you know, I don't want to say I told you so, because I don't want to be that kind of person, but I told you so. I knew that there were going to be examples of this, and I think at the time I had in mind teenage boys decided, you know, wink, wink, to join the girls' gym, you know, and want to be in the locker room and so on and so forth. Certainly, you know, a creative way for a young man to capture an eyeful, so to speak. And I knew this was going to be a potentiality, and now here we have it playing out in real life.
Yeah, it's very real, and it's very dramatic. And yet, just one state away in Oregon, we're representing and defending a woman who was a teacher at the Eagle Point School District. She was fired for refusing to use the student's new different gender name instead of the names that are in the grade book. She was abiding by the rules, doing what's right, and she was fired because she would not compromise her conscience and affirm gender confusion, encourage gender confusion in any child, which statistically has terrible outcomes.
Yeah, and that's tragic in a case like this. I mean, to begin with, expecting a teacher to have to keep all of that straight in their mind as to, well, there's your real name, and then there's the preferred name, and wait, you're only in eighth grade? Wait a minute here. I can't imagine somebody showing up at the Social Security office and being able to give them whatever name they wanted, or certainly going through a line at say immigration, you know, presenting your passport, but saying, "Oh, but that's not my name." I mean, you know, come on, folks. It's particularly amongst young children. I really don't understand what they think is being accomplished, other than contributing toward further confusion for young people.
Yeah, and this confusion, Craig, statistically results in unresolved depression and a huge exponential increase. In suicide. So this isn't just a little fad thing. This is serious business with serious outcomes, and that's why people who care about children, love children, have to take this issue very, very seriously.
This is also spilling into the foster parenting system, and we know that it's tragic that so often kids either in some cases are abandoned altogether or have to be removed out of the home for their own well-being and safety. There may be a parent who is violent, aggressive, has a drug habit, whatever the case might be. So the separation of a child and coming from one dysfunctional scenario into sort of this nebulous thing called the foster care system, challenging enough, let alone to find parents that are willing to open their home and deal with the challenges and the sacrifices. And it's ministry, to be sure. I don't want to minimize it at all, but it's not for everybody. And as a result, oftentimes there's a significant, large waiting list for kids that need help and yet are having a difficult time getting placement. And so it makes me wonder why, example again, out of the state of Oregon, why the state's putting up roadblocks to make it even more difficult for parents that would like to help out to be able to do so.
Yeah, we at Pacific Justice Institute, we're suing the state of Oregon because they have effectively banned Christian parents from being foster parents because they're requiring these foster parents to encourage and affirm existing dysphoria, gender confusion. Christian parents simply can't do that. And it's tragic because Christians, I think, you know, statistically make great foster parents. So we're suing the state of Oregon, and we're going to sue other states who engage in similar tyrannical discriminatory practices.
Boy, talk about a brave new world. We're in it. More information on the web at pacificjustice.org. That's pacificjustice.org. Our thanks to Brad Dacus, founder and president of the Pacific Justice Institute, for that update. 6 o'clock exactly from KFAX.
three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.